field hospital established in occupied Golan Heights to treat wounded militants. Turkey has also played a significant role in supporting these groups. From the beginning of the war, Ankara has been training and arming anti-Damascus groups and provided them with a base for their operations. It later launched direct attack on Syria, which resulted in the occupation of parts of northern Syria that has been going on since August 2016. The war in Syria erupted in 2011. Many believe that the foreign support for anti-Damascus groups has been the main reason why the conflict has not ended yet, after more than a decade. Syria is regarded as the forefront of what has come to be called the axis of resistance against Israel and West Asia. And now it seems that after the failure of the U.S. and Israel in Gaza and Lebanon, they plan to further undermine and destabilize the regional security to cover up further defeats.
A solemn ceremony to bid farewell to a national hero. A loss that underscores the continued sacrifices made by Iranian military advisors in the region as they maintain peace and stability in the face of threats from terrorist groups. Martyred in Aleppo last week, senior IRGC commander Brigadier General Keyumarspor Hashemi played a vital role in assisting Syrian forces, serving as a military advisor.
Martyr Por Hashemi was a brave and dedicated commander, a symbol of sacrifice. His martyrdom is a reminder of the unyielding commitment we have to support Syria in its struggle against foreign-backed terrorists. Despite these attacks, we remain resolute in our mission.
Martyr Por Hashemi lost his life in Aleppo during a large-scale assault by foreign-backed terrorists targeting Syrian military positions. This attack, reportedly carried out by the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham group, marked a significant escalation in the ongoing conflict in Syria, making the fight against them and the presence of Iranian military advisors even more crucial. Martyr Por Hashemi's son, feeling proud despite the loss.
I am grateful to God that my father achieved what he always wished for, to sacrifice his life in the righteous path. My father believed in defending the innocent and fighting terrorism wherever it existed. Losing him is painful, but I take great pride in knowing that his sacrifice has helped bring peace to many.
I always remember how committed he was to the resistance. He was fighting for his country and for Syria, aiming for the region to be peaceful. His legacy will continue through the strength of the Iranian forces and the Syrian people.
General Por Hashemi's martyrdom comes amid ongoing efforts by Iran to support Syria in its fight against terrorism. Since 2011, Iran has maintained an advisory mission in Syria at the request of the Syrian government. The Iranian military advisors have been instrumental in assisting Syrian forces reclaim territory and restore security.
Martyr Por Hashemi was not only a great warrior, but also a true man. At a time when our enemies tried to weaken the resistance, he stood firm and sacrificed his life. His blood will not be in vain.
As the country mourns the loss of this brave commander, Iranians remain firm in their support for Syria, signaling that this tragedy will not deter their commitment to regional peace and security.
Martyr Keyumarspor Hashem was not the first, and he will not be the last, as Iran remains steadfast in its support for Syria. Gizum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Despite reports of Israeli violations of a ceasefire deal in Lebanon, the people of South Lebanon, the Bekaa, and South Beirut eagerly drove back to their homes. Raising the picture of martyr Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, they returned to collect the pieces, but their resilience was evident in their words.
Our message to Netanyahu and the Israeli enemy is this. No matter what you do, you cannot break our will. And Sayyid Hassan is the crown of our nation, and his blood is more valuable and honorable than anything.
This is a gift from us to all resistance fighters in the Arab and Muslim worlds. We thank God for this victory. There were 70,000 Israeli soldiers at our border, but they could not enter by force, and they will never be able to unarm the resistance.
Hezbollah officials have already begun coordinating with the Lebanese government to begin a new phase of rebuilding.
We will rebuild our homes and we will negotiate with our partners in Lebanon to rebuild the state politically and economically. They failed in 2006 and failed in their so-called plot for a new Middle East. This is in itself a victory despite the suffering, the sorrow, the destruction and displacement. A victory is measured in strategic terms and not the destruction of a house or the loss of our beloved brothers whom we are saddened to miss.
Hezbollah believes the upcoming era will be the beginning of a wider alliance for the people of the region to form a strength that Israel cannot break.
As Hezbollah's resistance concluded what many experts are calling the most brutal battle in its history, the people of Lebanon have begun a new chapter of dusting themselves off and wiping out the traces of the Israeli killing machine. Maryam Saleh from the southern suburbs of Beirut.
For much of the world, it all started on October 7, 2023. But for Iranians, solidarity with Palestinians began with the very birth of the Islamic Republic in 1979. Following the victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution, its then leader Imam Khomeini wrote a letter inviting Muslims across the world to express their solidarity with Palestinians on the last Friday of every Ramadan, the day he coined as Quds Day. The Iranian nation's belief in standing with oppressed people such as Palestinians is reflected in Article 154 of the Constitution of the Islamic Republic, according to which it is a moral duty to support oppressed peoples fighting for their rights. Throughout the years, Iranians have consistently supported Palestine, standing in solidarity with its people in their struggle for rights and justice. Iran does not recognize the illegal occupation of Palestine, and the Iranian parliament has passed several resolutions to provide financial support to Palestinians, admit their displaced students to Iranian universities, and more. This commitment became even more evident after Israel launched its genocidal war on Gaza on October 7, 2023. In less than a month, over 10 million Iranians participated in a nationwide campaign to go to Gaza, and the hashtag You're Dealing With Us, addressing Israel, went viral. The heartfelt actions of ordinary Iranians have spoken louder than the words of powerful politicians, with countless people showing their support by donating their life savings at numerous grassroots charity events and donation drives.
We will give whatever we have, be it our gold, house, or car. We have started a financial initiative to donate to Palestinians. We will help them in any way we can to free them from the cursed, genocidal Israeli regime.
We have sold whatever we had at home that was barely used at a low price, just so we could donate the proceeds to Palestine.
I came here for the children in Gaza, Palestine, and Lebanon as my leader had commanded, and I have brought some of my allowance for them.
We've held this gathering to give the people around the world the message that the Islamic Republic of Iran and its resilient people support the resistance front and will never stop supporting the oppressed people of Palestine and Gaza, and all of those who are fighting in the resistance front.
And so long as war crimes continue, so will resistance and solidarity with Palestinians.
Maryam Azarchur, Tehran.
A totally unusual moment of happiness in the face of extreme adversity. Aysen has just arrived in the world but doesn't know whether she will live another day. And her family's displacement camp, her mother, who lost her only son, along with other moms and children gathered to celebrate the moment, a sense of sheer euphoria she hopes to last forever. As the cake reads, Aysen's family hopes to find light with her daughter in the midst of complete darkness and bleakness. The other for two children, Maya and Yazan, 13 years old, who the war severely traumatized and deprived of their basic rights, and the mother, embracing her newborn baby, whose eyes haven't yet opened to the injustice of this world, wishes to come back home and escape the incessant horror it chasing her family.
There is a sense of joy here. However, it is not complete as we are in the midst of a war and have been forced to leave our homes. Our lives are simply too difficult. Prices are really high. I have a newborn baby and thinking about how to provide her with milk, diapers, clothes, nourishment. Everything is outrageously expensive here. I even suffered from hunger during pregnancy and childbirth. But I'm very grateful to God for having this girl after my only son was killed.
We've had a great time celebrating our birthdays. I'm eager to return to my home in Gaza City. We wish to return to our hometowns and schools. This war will eventually come to an end, God willing.
Newborn Aizen and the 12 children, Maya and Yazan, don't know if they will live for the next days. But the war in Gaza, which killed more than 43,000 Palestinians, mostly children and women, and wounded over 105,000 others, has never changed the resilience and steadfastness of the Palestinian people. And the happiness we've just lived today with those people is a reflection of eternal hope they have been always clinging on to. Abu Bakr Abid, Deir al-Balah, Gaza.
Fruitful Moments with Irabi English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the hegemonic front continues to do all that it can to support the Israeli regime. It still allows the Zionist regime to starve and bomb people to death in Gaza 14 months after it started this genocide. It allows the regime to kill thousands and to destroy many buildings in Lebanon and to continue to violate the ceasefire agreement. And then it allowed another front to be open, this time by Takfiri terrorists in Syria, to weaken the whole resistance front. Well, we're going to take a look at the latest coming out of Syria and what it all means on this spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Okay, John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst out of Canada, and Laith Maruf, activist and political commentator out of Lebanon. Thank you both for being with me. I'll start off with John. John, what do you make of the timing of this terrorist attack by HTS, Hayat al-Sham, on Aleppo?
Well, first things first, let's not pretend that these are so-called real terrorists. These are CIA terror agents, nothing more. These are people who are financed, organized, and directed out of the government within a government in the United States. And they are activated whenever the deep state wants to create confusion and disorder. And they don't care who they kill. What they care is what they disrupt and what they achieve. And so let's call them what they are. These are American-financed, American-backed terror agents.
Right. Well, let's look at that live, because what John has just talked about, I want to talk about Operation Timber Sycamore, actually, which was launched by the CIA, the help of the UK and some regional intelligence agencies back in 2012. Its goal to overthrow Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Now, the operation trained and gave weapons and money to thousands of so-called rebel opposition in Syria. So if we look at what has happened since 2012, I mean, at least 500,000 Syrians were killed, at least 10 million displaced. How responsible would you say the United States is for what took place then and what is happening right now?
Is that for me?
No, it's that's for
life. Directly responsible for the slaughter, and obviously, you know, you brought up the proof immediately in your question, but it's important right now to look at what's happening currently, and that is that the empire ruled from D.C. with its local vassals, Turkey and the others like the Zionist colony, have reactivated these death squads, the Wahhabi Contras, in the Idlib region because they believe that they have weakened the other components of the axis of resistance, namely Hezbollah, who in the last confrontation around Aleppo was key in the liberation of the region of Aleppo and the Battle of Saraqib against the Turkish military directly, where that Astana peace and ceasefire agreement was signed because of that. So now the axis of resistance looks weak to the enemies, and this is why they attacked in this region. And currently, as we see, the Iraqi popular mobilization units are having to fill the role that Hezbollah did in the last confrontation there. And I would say all these attacks that we are seeing, whether it's in Lebanon or in Syria, you know, we know our enemy is vicious, is criminal, and the leadership of the Axis of Resistance needs to change their track and go on the offensive to make sure that the long-term plans that the Zionists and the Empire have laid out don't actually come to fruition. Sitting down in a defensive manner, as we have seen over the last 14 months, the Axis of Resistance, for the most part, was on the defensive and showing solidarity fronts with Palestine, have led that posture has led to the assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, Sheikh Haniyeh, and Yahya Sinwar, and the multitude of generals and military leaders on all the fronts. This is not a winning formula. The Axis of Resistance should go on the offensive right
now.
What
does that mean,
Life?
Let's open that up a little bit.
The HDS can roll into.
Let's open up what you're saying a little bit when you're saying that the Axis of Resistance have been more in a defensive mode and should go in an offensive mode. So what are you saying? What should be done in your perspective?
What should have been done a while ago, even 6 months ago, was to the destruction of Israeli air capabilities and an invasion, liberation of the Golan Heights and the north of Palestine. If the HDS ragtag militia death squad can roll into Aleppo within 2 days, the forces of the Axis of Resistance can roll into Jerusalem in 2 days also. The problem here is that if we continue on this defensive posture and attempt to negotiate with Turkey or sway them or sway some of the Arab monarchies in the Gulf to change reality or play this diplomatic game, we may see
attacks directly right now to assassinate President Assad or Abdelmalek al-Houthi, Sayyid Abdelmalek al-Houthi of Yemen, or even the Ayatollah in Iran. This defensive posture and waiting for the this so-called ceasefire in Lebanon for 60 days, that brings Trump into power at the end of those 60 days, and he's coming to attack Iran. If we sit down and wait for them to attack Iran, we will be regretting it.
Okay. All right. Well, John, what about this? I mean, let's talk about what Vlad said, because on the one hand, as they say, hindsight is 20/20. But the reality is that we know from the very beginning, the Zionist regime has wanted the United States to get more directly involved and to bring Iran more directly involved and to basically weaken the part of the resistance that was actually trying to, as far as giving weapons and support. I mean, your take on where we are right now, because if we look at what is happening in Syria, do you think that the resistance front in general needs to be more aggressive right now? We know just probably like an hour ago, we do know that Hezbollah has responded to some of the Israeli basically not following up on the ceasefire, and Hezbollah did respond. But your thoughts on what needs to be done at this point in time?
Well, I take somewhat of a little bit more of a perspective view here. I think Trump is himself in a conundrum, and it's as your other commentator mentioned today, he's 2 months away, less than 2 months now, before he becomes president. And Trump has sold himself to the public as being the anti-war president. But he sold himself to the Israel lobby as being their war president. So Trump is going to have to make a decision of whether he puts the Israel lobby before America or if he puts America before the Israel lobby. And that's going to come very, very quickly in late January and early February. I'm hoping, as a person who's covered as a military correspondent for many years, I've covered conflicts, and I think that there is a chance that if the right people speak to Trump, he can be persuaded not to fall victim to the Israel lobby and not to be their paid boxer against their enemies. That's about that. As for the situation in Syria, the fact is that these are American-backed. And when I say American, I don't mean the people of America, and far from it. The people of America have no idea what is being done in their name by the CIA, the NSA, and the other organizations that run the secret government. But there is an American military-industrial complex which makes billions and trillions of dollars by fostering wars like this. And so what has to be done on the part of the Syrian government and on the part of the axis of resistance is that they need to, as your other commentator mentioned, they need to devastatingly crush these guerrilla agents of the deep state of the United States. They need to destroy them. And I think that there's a good possibility that they might be able to seek Russian assistance in that mission, because Russia has been building up the defenses against the warmonger Americans for the better part of a decade, and now has superior weapons in every category. If it turns out that the Syrian government needs assistance in turning back these terror agents of the deep state, I would suggest that Russia should give that assistance, and it should be quickly mopped up, and Syria should be secured. Because okay. Syria, if it's put under pressure, puts additional pressure on the rest of the region, including Iran.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Right. Of course, Russia has been involved in some airstrikes. We'll see exactly what else that entails. Life in 2016, because you talked about Donald Trump coming to power. I want to go back to 2016, because then presidential candidate Trump accused Barack Obama, who was president, of actually founding ISIS or Daesh in Syria, and that needed to stop. I mean, you talked about him coming to power and perhaps making it worse. How likely is it what John said, that perhaps he can go back to that perspective he had in 2016, and that he said we need not to be involved in Syria?
Well, look, that would entail me believing that of the fairy tale of democracy. Trump is just a sock puppet, just as Biden is, and they just play this theatrics for the nullification and dullification of the Western audience, the American citizens. The truth of the matter, neither of them actually rule this empire, and the Zionists are part of those who actually rule the empire. It's impossible to decouple right now somebody like Trump from the Zionists. That would be even more foolish than the attempt to sway Erdogan away from NATO towards BRIC. That's both of those are a fool's errand. It's easier to chop off the tail of a dog than imagine it ever becoming straight or stopping to wag. So this is realism, not utopia that we're talking about, and we are in the midst of a war. Look, the American bases in Iraq and Syria must come under attack right now. If they don't come into under attack and the Americans are not weakened in the region when Trump comes in, he is going to be slowing down the war in Ukraine and launching a major attack on all of the axis of resistance, including Iran. And it's not because it's Trump. This is the original American plan for the new American century with Bush. The idea was to destroy all the republics that escaped colonialism in the Arabic and Muslim world. And then, after that, clearing the playing board from the smaller pieces, go directly into confrontation with Russia and China. And what we saw is, because the Arabic peoples, the Muslim peoples of the region, the axis of resistance, fought the Americans over every inch and drew them into a quagmire of quicksand, the Americans were stuck here and couldn't attack Russia or China. And in the meanwhile, in those 30 almost years, China became the biggest economy in the world, and Russia revived its military capabilities. And that's why the Americans rushed into a war in Ukraine without finishing the job here. And as we see right now, the deep state in the United States is trying to gear up back again to try to finish off the major opponent that it has in Western Asia here, the axis of resistance, mm-hmm. before going back to attacking Russia and China.
Okay. Well, John, what does it mean that, on the one hand, attack theory terrorists, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, HTS, are labeled a terrorist group by the U.S., but on the other hand, Washington is using them to sow chaos in Syria?
Well, they have to maintain this cloak of deniability. They never admitted setting up Al-Qaeda. They never admitted setting up ISIS. They never admitted providing them with weapons. They mysteriously buried bin Laden at sea, so there's never been any body found. It's like a fairy tale, as my fellow commentator has said here. And actually, there is a large number of people in Washington who know what's going on, but they're afraid for their jobs. I worked as a management consultant and lobbyist in Washington during the worst era of the Bush regime, and I can tell you that there are many people who know what the truth is, but there are very few people who have the guts to share it.
So what does it mean, John? I mean, at the end of the day, because the people of the region, West Asia, are the ones suffering. The Americans, those who are in Washington, they know the truth, but they're afraid of losing their jobs, so they won't stand up against the government. In the meantime, people in West Asia and other parts of the world to lose their lives from this industrial military complex. So go ahead.
Unfortunately, there's a world of difference in the perspective of the American people who are the victims of the lying mainstream media. They are not seeing any pictures of what these terrorists are doing, these terror agents are doing. They are only told that Syria is bad, Iraq is bad, Iran is bad, and that's all they need, because the average American is just basically getting by, trying to pay their credit card bills, and they believe whatever talking head, lying talking head on CNN or CBS or MSNBC tell them.
Right.
There is a world change necessary, and the people of America do not know what is going on, and I sincerely hope that some of them somehow find their way to alternative news sources like Press TV that can tell them that what they're being told is a lie, and that it's their responsibility to find out what the truth is. Yeah. Because as your other commentator said earlier, there is no democracy in America. And I live here in the so-called democracy of Canada, where I know for a fact that we're ruled by a clique that is self-perpetuating. So this has to be with the public.
Okay. Well, Lyth, looking at the Syrian situation and the lack of stability or weakened Syria, tell me about Turkey's role. How does Turkey benefit from this type of turmoil taking place inside of Syria?
Is this for me?
No, it's for Lyth.
Well, number one is the getting, you know, being in favor, in the favor of the empire. And we saw Turkey loot all the industrial base of Syria that was in the regions around Aleppo, and the Syrian industries, specifically clothing and small electronics and so forth, were the biggest competitor for Turkish industries in the region. We have all the olive oil and all the harvest of Idlib and North Aleppo, that is some of the most fertile regions in the area. So the Turks have gained a lot, and now, as we see, they have control over Aleppo, the second or third oldest city, continuous inhabited city in the world. They're flying the Ottoman Turkish flag on the top of the citadel of Aleppo. These are all, bringing back the idea of Turkish Ottoman rule over the area. We see Turkey then now being given more role in destabilizing Central Asian countries and the, Turkic nations, including the Uyghur in China. Turkey benefits a lot from being such a venomous state ruled by Erdogan in the region. And so what is the axis of resistance and or Russia? What can we offer Turkey that can sway them away from such, gifts from the empire? This is why it's clear that it's a fool's errand to try to change Turkey without, an actual revolution there. Even remember the day when Russia and Iran saved Erdogan from the coup that the United States was organizing against him. They should have probably let him fall. There's nothing redeemable about Erdogan. And look at how the Turkish state maintained all the oil and supplies to the war machine of Israel without the continued deliveries of Azerbaijani oil and looted Syrian and Iraqi oil that was smuggled through Turkey to the Zionist colony. The Israeli war machine would have come to a halt.
Right.
They couldn't be operating their machineries.
Okay. Well, John, today the U.S., U.K., France, and Germany called for a de-escalation in Syria. It is mind-boggling to hear this when these are the parties which have sponsored and supported the terrorists to begin with this destabilization project of Syria. Since 2012, I mean, your thoughts on this hypocrisy, and once again, this is the image, of course, that's going to be shown to, as you said, mainstream media throughout the world, that these entities are actually calling for de-escalation in Syria.
Well, I think those of us who have experience in these matters know that these are just bald-faced lies. Specifically in the case of America's military colonies in Europe, Germany, England, and France, they do what they're told. It's a sad thing to have to admit, but they just do what they're told. They don't have an option. Germany is whining a little bit about being on the front lines in Ukraine, but when it comes to Turkey, they're far enough away from the situation that they're going to do what they're told, at least until Biden is out of office. I really think that your other commentator and I are on the exact same line about the so-called utopia and the fake democracy in America, but I haven't yet given up hope. I do think that the American leadership will think about their own interests first. And when caused to make a choice, when forced to make a choice of being the, as you said it, sock puppet of the Israel lobby, I think there's a chance that Donald Trump can be swayed. But we have to get to Donald Trump, and we have to make it worth his while to do so.
Okay.
And we've seen that already happen with Elon Musk, who made it worth his own while to move from being a Democrat to being a Republican. We need to flip things head for tails in Washington
okay.
if we don't want
Stay
to
with me, John. Lyeth, okay. final comments. Where do you see this situation going in Syria?
I hope I am correct in assessing that it seems like the Russian Air Force and Russian military has awakened to the plots of Erdogan, and as we see also, Iran is responding by sending all these military advisors that were part of the liberation of Aleppo last time, and the thousands of Iraqi popular mobilization units that have crossed already the border to come to the defense of Aleppo and Hama. So I hope that we will be seeing the crushing defeat of these Wahhabi death squads, and this time nobody should be trying to stop the Syrian military from completely liberating Idlib and
okay.
Aleppo. This should be the target, and it should be done as fast as possible
okay,
before the
that
coming
note, I'm
of
so
Trump,
sorry, I have to interrupt
so
you,
that these
but
allied
we
forces
are
and the
out of time. Appreciate
are.
Both of you being with me. John Busnage, journalist out of Canada, Lyeth Maroth, activist and political commentator out of Lebanon. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Donald Trump has maintained a hard line on Canada after meeting with Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau at his residence in Mar-a-Lago in Florida. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump said he had a productive meeting with Justin Trudeau after the Canadian Prime Minister paid a surprise trip to his Mar-a-Lago state amid fears about Trump's promised tariffs. Trudeau became the first leader to meet with Donald Trump before his second term amid widespread fears in Canada and many other parts of the world that Trump's trade policy will cause widespread economic chaos. But Trump also seemed to double down on the threat, which he has frequently linked to trying to encourage other countries to combat drug smuggling into the United States. Trump, in a statement posted on his Truth Social platform, said, "I just had a very productive meeting with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of Canada, where we discussed many important topics that would require both countries to work together to address, like the fentanyl and drug crisis that has decimated so many lives as a result of illegal immigration, fair trade deals that do not jeopardize American workers, and the massive trade deficit the United States has with Canada." Justin Trudeau and a handful of top advisors flew to Florida amid expectations that Donald Trump will impose a 25% surcharge on Canadian products that could have a devastating impact on Canadian energy, auto industry, and manufacturing exports. The meeting over dinner between Justin Trudeau and Donald Trump included U.S. cabinet nominees and Canadian officials and lasted over 3 hours and was described by a senior Canadian official to the Toronto Star as positive and wide-ranging discussions. Donald Trump added, "I made it very clear that the United States will no longer sit idly by as our citizens become victims of the scourge of this drug epidemic, caused mainly by the drug cartels, the fentanyl pouring in from China, too much death and hardship. Prime Minister Trudeau has made a commitment to work with us to end this terrible devastation of U.S. families." Leaving a Florida hotel in West Palm Beach on Saturday, 30th of November, Justin Trudeau said it was an excellent conversation. The face-to-face meeting came at Justin Trudeau's suggestion, according to Canadian officials, and had not been disclosed to the Ottawa Press Corps, which only found out about Trudeau's trip when flight tracking software detected the Prime Minister's plane was in the air. The two leaders also discussed next year's G7 meeting, which Justin Trudeau will host in Kananaskis, Alberta, 7 years after Donald Trump abruptly left the 2018 G7 summit at Charleroi, Quebec, amid a U.S.-Canadian dispute over American steel and aluminium tariffs. The Pennsylvania Senator-elect Dave McCormick posted a photograph of the social media platform X late on Friday night showing Justin Trudeau sitting beside Donald Trump. Others in the picture were Howard Lutnick, Donald Trump's nominee for Commerce Secretary, Governor Doug Burgum of North Dakota, the pick for Interior Secretary, and U.S. Representative Mike Waltz of Florida, the pick for National Security Advisor. Canadian officials present included the Public Safety Minister Dominic LeBlanc, responsible for border security, and Justin Trudeau's Chief of Staff, Katie Telford, Canada's Ambassador to Washington, Kirsten Hillman, and Trudeau's Deputy Chief of Staff, Brian Clore. Canada's Public Safety Minister Dominic Leblanc said Canada was prepared to beef up border security with more money for technology, drones and more Mounties and border guards on the 49th parallel. Earlier on Friday, Justin Trudeau told reporters that he looked forward to having lots of great conversations with Donald Trump and that the two would work together to meet some of the concerns and respond to some of the issues. Trudeau also said it was important to understand that Donald Trump, when he makes statements like that, he plans on carrying them out. There's no question about it. He said our responsibility is to point out that in this way, he would actually not just be harming Canadians who work so well with the United States, he would actually be raising prices for American citizens as well and hurting American industry and businesses. However, some observers were less impressed by the meeting between Trudeau and Trump. Fenn Hampton, a professor of international affairs at Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada, told Bloomberg News Agency the symbolism of Trudeau going down to Palm Beach on bended knees to say, "Please don't," is very, very powerful. The stakes are enormously high and Trudeau has to deliver on this. Fenn Hampton added, "The stakes are enormously high and Trudeau has to deliver on this. Otherwise, it's going to be seen by Canadians as a failed mission, because we all know why he's going down there and it's not to base the turkey for Trump." The scramble to defuse Donald Trump's tariff threats has also preoccupied the Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum, in recent days. On Thursday, President Sheinbaum said she had a very kind telephone conversation with Donald Trump in which they discussed immigration and fentanyl. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump said on Saturday he discussed the border, trade and energy in a very productive meeting with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau amid fears of a trade war between the United States and Canada. Trudeau paid an unannounced visit to Florida on Friday evening and had dinner with Donald Trump at his Mar-a-Lago residence days after Republican Trump pledged to impose 25% tariffs on Canadian and Mexican imports after he's sworn in as president in January. The pledge has raised fears of a trade war between the United States and two of its biggest trading partners. Mexico's president, Claudia Sheinbaum, warned this week that Donald Trump's tariffs plan would have dire consequences for both countries and suggested possible retaliation. Trump wants to use tariffs as a tool to get Mexico and Canada to help stem the flow of illegal drugs into the United States, particularly the deadly opioid fentanyl, and also migrants crossing illegally into the United States. Donald Trump wrote on his Truth Social platform, "We discussed many important topics that will require both countries to work together to address, like the fentanyl and drug crisis that has decimated so many lives as a result of illegal immigration, fair trade deals that do not jeopardize American workers, and the massive trade deficit the United States has with Canada." Trump added, "Justin Trudeau has made a commitment to work with us to end this terrible devastation of U.S. families." On Friday, Trudeau said at a news conference in Canada he was taking the possible tariffs seriously.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headline Studio strongly rejects reports about the presence of terrorist groups in some neighborhoods of Hama, calling them part of the enemy's psychological media war. The Israeli regime continues to violate the fragile ceasefire in Lebanon, killing more civilians under the false pretext of hitting Hezbollah's positions. Also coming up,